Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity, the show where we always use the correct mic. My name's John Reardon. This is episode 268. I'm saying information out of order. And with me today, as always, is Neil Ronahan.
Hey, everybody.
Hi. And joining us also is Zachary Miller.
Hey, guys. Good to be back.
I think you might be the first return guest in the John and Neil era of Connectivity.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
I think
popular request, I think. If you did not want Zach back on the show, send us some listener mail at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
I unfortunately don't have a game for you guys today.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was a little bit... we have an indie world happen today, so we're going to focus more on that. Zach, we'll have you back to do a game again.
Okay.
We should get back in that jive. I'll even throw this out on Front Street. And pin it at the feet of Andy Gergen, who expressed interest in how we should try to do Who Wants to Be a Nintendoware on Twitch.
Oh, that's right.
So pressure us into doing that.
That sounds stressful and exciting, and I'm sure Matt would love it.
Yep. Can't wait to get Matt involved.
have some strange stream setup rigged up.
So you, person listening to this, let's try to get some listener mail. So here's what we're going to do. Send it to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Give us some sort of question. And also, you know, put something so that way we know it's for, because it's part of this contest of sorts. Put something in there with your favorite game from the Indie World presentation on April 14th, 2021. Put something about your favorite game from there and send us in a question that it doesn't have to be related to the game. Just question and a game. And as long as we get more than five people sending it in, because I'm not going to have it where it's just David Lloyd seeing my anagrams thing in the description to that RPG episode with Jordan the other week. Need to have a minimum of five people write in, and I will give you a copy of a hotly anticipated game that came out in March.
David immediately makes five different accounts to send in five emails.
But need to have a minimum of five people write in, and it is a game, hotly anticipated game that came out in March, that may or may not have had the demo for the game removed from the eShop.
Oh, we still have that?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Listen, David, I know you're listening. It's not worth it. All right. Don't make all the accounts. You're not going to be happy with yourself if you do.
Yeah. So it'll all be, I'm not going to mention in the description. You got to listen to the show to get the information.
But
yeah.
There's a listener mail in my inbox. Are we going to read that one?
You have a listener? Oh, we did get one the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. We're not prepared.
I've got it. Hold on. Let me pull it up. Okay. Here we go. This is from Jared. Hacker alias Jared_E_A. Big fan of Connectivity. I'm not up on the social medias, so maybe I should have sent a DM. I probably didn't need to read that part. Either way, I was wondering, what are your favorite reviews and least favorite ones? I don't mean a 10 out of 10 game. What games did you have the most and least fun reviewing?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
I will say, jumping out in front of this, is I feel like the easy answer for me is Mario Kart 8. But
yeah.
Reviewing that game was fine.
Yeah. Sure.
I had two buddies of mine came over and we raced through every track. Like, it was super fun. I had a great time reviewing Mario Kart 8. Sat down, write my review, got it all in. Everything after the review process sucked. But the Mario Kart 8 was a very fun review.
Yeah.
Not my favorite though. I need to think about that a little more.
I'd probably give it a 7.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my least favorite. I think my least favorite might have been Ark Survival Evolved.
Oh, really?
It's no fun to just completely rag on a game.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it is. Where, like, there's potential there, but it just fails.
Like, Balan Wonderworld, ragging on that was delightful. And I had a wonderful time and regret no part of playing it.
I enjoyed reading that review, John.
Oh, good. but but Ark was just, there's, when you're reviewing something, you feel like you need to give it like a fair shot. Like you're not, you know, Polygon reviewing Star Fox Zero. So like you want to play a good amount of the game. but like, boy, Ark Survival Evolved on Switch. What an absolute dumpster fire of a game. I was losing connection to their servers when I was playing offline.
Like, oh, it was
incredible.
Oh, God.
How is that possible?
And I just couldn't play it handheld because it like made me nauseous. And it was just a horrible, horrible time.
Wow.
And then I gave it a 2. And then like a couple days later, the special edition arrived at my apartment. And apparently their PR had also decided to mail me a physical edition, which like kind of made me feel bad. Like I still think they got the score it deserved, but like, that's like, great. Now I have also a physical copy. So that's sitting sealed on my shelf still.
It's going to be worth so much money someday.
I may have sold everything else from that special edition.
I threw out the box at some point. It sat here for way too long.
Wait, did you get one too?
Yeah, they sent me one.
Why
as well.
Did they send us so many?
No idea.
If you work for the PR that handled Ark on Switch, listen, sometimes a digital code is fine. I don't need. Actually, you know what? The soundtrack is the best part of Ark. I take it back because I think that's Gareth Coker, the guy that did and the Blind Forest.
Yeah, and he's also working on Halo, I think. Halo Infinite has a bizarrely stacked, like, composer list.
Interesting. They've always had good composers on that. He also did Immortals.
Yeah, because Gareth Coker is there. Composers. Joel Corlitz, who did Tumbleseed, which is a really good soundtrack. He also on occasion when I don't have any background music for a review, he has a thing called Music for Nothing Online, where it's just like some songs that he made to be used in YouTube videos and stuff.
No.
It's very nice. I think it's also got the Manifold Garden composer too, which that's another really good soundtrack.
What a weird, like, indie focused collection of composers to do Halo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, because the one guy, like Marty O'Donnell, was that the guy's name?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were two that did it in the old days. I can't think of the other guy's name.
Yeah, but I think he's gone.
Well, I think he's been gone since ODST.
Yeah, and also the Starbound composer is there too.
Oh,
okay.
It's a real good, like, very interesting assortment.
I look forward to playing that game.
Yeah,
if it ever comes out.
I like some Halo. Right, right. Well, I have the Series X is ready. It's waiting. Currently it's being used to play Star Wars Squadrons again, which is still great.
So I've been scanning through I kept a list of all the stupid amount of reviews that I've done over the years. I think I have a least favorite one. I have two. Dylan's Rolling Western is one of them, which is largely because that was one where I think, if memory serves me, that was announced at a Nintendo Direct and it was available that day. We got access to that game a couple days before. So it was this thing where it was like an unannounced game that I could not talk about that I was playing and hating. And then like it got announced and people were excited about it. I'm there just like, it's terrible. On the flip side, Dylan's Dead Heat Breakers, the third one on 3DS that you probably didn't even know came out because it came out like 2018.
That game's
awesome. Dylan's Dead Heat Breakers, it's legit. It's just that, unfortunately, it was a $40 digital-only 3DS game that came out in May of 2018.
No, man.
And then, oh god, what's the name of... I forget the name of it, but it was the Soul Seraph. The Act Razor, like, because playing that game, I just realized that it wasn't good. And I was really excited for it. And Academy of Champions, which is a game that I disliked so much that I sent to Zach for him to review.
I forgot about that until you just said it. That was just such a disappointment.
It really was.
I think my least favorite was, honestly, it was probably Homie Rollers.
Well, that's a but that's like your best review.
It is one of my best reviews. Absolutely. So it was fun to rag on that. You know, it's true. You review a bad game that's just plain bad like that. You write a funny review about it. So I guess here's what I'll say. It's an early review. I still think about it from time to time. Phantom Hourglass.
Mm.
And it's because, like,
yeah,
because
you gave it like a 6 or something.
No,
right?
I gave it like a 7.5, 7. Okay. But I will remember forever playing that game and being like, I'm supposed to like this. It's a Zelda game. What am I not getting? But mm-hmm. I just couldn't find the enjoyment for it. And and it was my first, you know, first experience with kind of a big game like that to review, and I assumed it was going to be great. So it was just very disappointing. And then what do you write for the review? You know, God, this Zelda game blows.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, guys.
Well, then, like, everyone's going to just think you're a crazy idiot.
Yeah.
Like, the people who haven't played it are going to be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. It's like, dude, I played it.
Yeah.
So I'll even comment that, not to speak for Nintendo World Report budding superstar Alex Arona, but his review for Saga Frontier, which is a Saga Frontier remastered version of a, I think it's 1998 PlayStation 1 game.
Mm-hmm.
He gave it a 6.5 out of 10. I edited the video review for him, so I'm intimately familiar with his text. But I feel like he lays out a really good case for, like, why he wants to like that game more than he does, but it just didn't sit well with him.
Yeah.
And, like, looking at some of the comments out there, like, there's people that definitely adore this game, but it's really tough when it's like, this should be my jam.
Yeah.
And, like, Alex is a big, like, old school JRPG dude. And when it's not, then you're just kind of like, oh no, like, what now? Like, this is supposed to be for me. It's like, if whatchamacallit, like, if Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 came out and I hated it.
Yeah.
Which I didn't. Or actually, no, it's easier to do that. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5 is a video game that existed, even if Activision is trying to erase it from history. That game is terrible trash, and I wanted to believe it to be okay, and it's not.
Yeah. I forgot that game existed too.
I actually tried to break it out, but, like, it's removed from every digital store.
Really?
Oh, really? Like, they pulled it?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's one of those ones, like, they did it, I think, actually, it's probably for the same reason as, like, the Activision Marvel games. Like, you can't get those, like, Deadpool, Marvel Ultimate Alliance, those games you can't get anymore because the license expired.
Gotcha. Mm. Yeah. Huh.
Has anyone said a game they liked reviewing?
I have some on the tip of my tongue. Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild.
Absolute
sure. Magical experiences playing both games. You know, got to play them before they came out. And both were just like, I mean, like, times where I have very distinct memories of playing those games. Yeah, like, you know, maybe my opinion on Skyward Sword is going to change when I replay it for the first time 10 years later.
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild, my opinion on that game has not really changed that much. I adore that game.
Yeah.
But those are things that landed really, really well for me. I'm trying to think of, like, something more under the radar, like just a game that really surprised me that I wasn't expecting as much from. The Swords of Ditto on Switch was a really fun game to review because it's like a procedurally generated, like, 2D Zelda game that was just super fun to play.
I'll echo that in that, like, I think a lot of my favorite reviews are the ones that I go into just kind of going like, yeah, I'll try this, and then just wind up absolutely loving it even more so than, like, playing, like, some first party Nintendo thing that I kind of know I'm gonna be into. Like Oceanhorn 2 or Embracelet or Rebel Galaxy Outlaw, like one of these games where I kind of go in like, this will be neat, and then I play it, I'm like, oh crap, yeah, this is great. Those I think are my favorite to review, because then you get to, like, you feel like you get to tell everyone, like, guys, there's this game that you didn't know was here, but it's here and it's great. Like, those are the best ones.
Yeah.
Elliot Quest is another one that, great, like, game. I knew nothing about. It showed up on Wii U. And I played through it, and it's basically like an incredible Zelda 2 like.
Yeah, it's good. Really hard, but very good.
Yeah. Yeah, very unforgiving, but, you know, so is Zelda 2. So
yeah. Yeah, I think my favorite, to take John's ball and run with it, my favorite's Horizon Chase Turbo. I went in there thinking it was Outrun, and it's really not. It's more Top Gear. But I just fell in love with that game so hard. But that was a feeling I got when I was writing this review. I was like, I have to tell the world how good this game is.
Yeah, they don't know, but they must know.
Yeah, and there's like references to Fast and the Furious in that game, and the soundtrack's incredible, and I will always remember too, I could not get the name right when I was doing the audio for
the oh my review. God, yeah.
I kept calling it Horizon Chase Zero or some shit.
Horizon Chase Zero Dawn.
Right.
Yeah.
And throwing it way, way back. Mushroom Men the Spore Wars on Wii.
Oh, wow. I had a Nintendo Power poster for that game.
I knew nothing about that game and then played it and thought it was really, really cool. Also, points for having the dude from Primus doing some real good music for it.
Really?
Well, great. Good listener mail, everyone. Yeah,
thanks for writing in, and I'm glad I saw it on Twitter and sent it to Zach and he remembered.
Yeah. Because I sure as heck wasn't. Well, let's, shall we talk about that Indie Direct? Or not Indie Direct, Indie Showcase?
Indie World is
Indie
the name.
World. Okay. That.
Yeah, yeah. So there's, all right. As maybe one of the world's foremost Nindy scholars, what happened was there's been three different forms of like indie shows that Nintendo has done. Nintendo of America has done Nindy showcases. The first one of those was right before the Switch came out, I think. And those happened, you know, kind of regularly, like I think it was like every March and August for a while. Then there were European ones that I think were called like Nindy Highlights or something like that. And then there were Japan ones called Indie World. At some point, I want to say, I think it was 2018, maybe 2019. Then they all kind of, like, it was, every branch was kind of doing their own one. Then they kind of all got on the same page. Because I don't know if you remember, there was that one year where, like, we got, like, two indie things, one from Europe and one from America. Like, one was around Gamescom, the other one was around PAX Prime. Mm. And, like, it was just like, okay, this is kind of confusing and overwhelming, and, like, what's what? What one's more important? I don't know. So I think it was after that was when Indie World became a worldwide initiative. Where there's some differences, like usually the Japanese one will have a couple different games, but it's like all airing at the same time. So Indie World, it's technically not a direct.
I mean, it sure feels like one.
Yeah.
It's whatever the polar opposite of Xbox's indie thing was.
I did points to Nintendo of America's John Vignacchi, who tweeted, I promise it's not going to be 3 hours long.
I like that, yeah.
There's a very playful dig at his, you know, friendly competition that is, like, not even down the road. Like, I think he could probably throw a rock from Nintendo of America headquarters and hit Microsoft.
I wish he would have. That might have made him stop. Like, yo, it's going too long. Somebody go over there and stop him.
A rock with a note on it that just said, wrap it up, man.
It's been three hours.
It sucks because the Xbox thing had a lot of really good content, a lot of really good games. It's just that, like, you needed to do, like, the 20-minute presentation.
Right.
And then have all of your interviews.
That thing had commercial breaks.
Oh, my God.
There were, like, the hosts had to, like, have potty breaks multiple times throughout the stream.
Yep.
It was horrible.
Yeah, like, and I tuned out, and I would just check in, and it was like, okay, well, Drinkbox announced their new game.
Yeah.
And there's like The Wild at Heart is a game that I will likely talk on this show when it comes out on May, which is, it's Luigi's Mansion Pikmin is the best that I can describe that, with like a top down perspective.
Hmm. I'm trying to even remember. There was so much and it was so spread out.
Yeah.
None of it is retained.
That one was given a release date very early on. Okay. Never talked about again, but it's coming to Game Pass. I played a demo last year. There's actually an article on Nintendo World Report about it, because I played the demo not knowing that it was only announced for like PC and Xbox, and then like wrote something and was like, ah, shit. So I just said, like, this isn't slated for Switch right now, but it's something that I feel like Nintendo fans would enjoy, because it is like kind of like a top-down 2D Luigi's Mansion Pikmin game.
Yeah. But let's talk about the games that were in this indie world. And let's see. You guys wrote down several each. I wrote down one. So why don't one of you... Zach, you're the guest. Why don't you pick a game that you want to talk about and talk about it a little bit?
All right. I want to talk about Ninja Turtles, Shredder's Revenge, which is a arcade-style... four-player co-op Turtles game.
They're just making a new arcade Turtles game.
Yeah, they're just making a new arcade Turtles. And it's by Tribute. Tribute's one of my favorite indie developers. They made my beloved Mercenary Kings and Panzer Paladin.
Which, Panzer Paladin's on sale. I think I'm going to pick it up finally. Oh, buy that shit.
It's so good. And then they teamed up with, how do you say that name?
Dot Emu,
who did who brought us Streets of Rage 4.
Yeah, so Dot Emu, I think their role is more publisher with some of these things, because they did Wonder Boy, The Dragon's Trap. They did Streets of Rage 4. And I think with Streets of Rage 4, like, they did some of the artwork, but the game development of Streets of Rage 4 was by Guard Crush Games, I believe is the name.
Oh, okay.
So, like, they kind of operate in a way where, I mean, they definitely have a touch, and I believe they work on the artwork, but they're not necessarily, like, hands, like, they're more publisher than they are hands-on developer with some of these games. But I think they still do have some kind, because they also, like, Dot Emu, like, they're making Windjammers 2. They're publishing a couple other games, and they ported Final Fantasy VIII Remastered. Like, they did the porting of that.
Huh.
So, like, Dot Emu, for my money, one of the most fun publisher developers out there, because their lineup is just filled with bangers.
Yeah. And but Ninja Turtles, it looks like the arcade game. I mean, it looks exactly like it. The art style's a little different, but the turtles have what appear to be the special attacks from the arcade game, number two, or number one in arcades. And they all have unique run cycles, which I am very tickled by. But Bebop and Rocksteady are in it, and different colored foot soldiers, and you can throw them into the screen. And just everything about it looks amazing, and it's coming later this year.
I do like, there's a moment in the gameplay they showed where the Foot Clan guys were sitting at computer desks,
yeah,
and they were all wearing ties to blend in, as if we wouldn't know.
I do. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm so excited to just see more stuff like that throughout the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be kind of a paradise for people who really, really like Ninja Turtles, and there's going to be little Easter eggs here and there. And according to what it appears to be, I wouldn't be surprised in the animated trailer that they put out, which is kind of a redo of the old theme song. Not as good. The theme song is, their cover is not as good, but the animation's amazing. It looks like Splinter and April might be playable, just based on that animation. I feel like
they might have even referenced April being playable.
Oh, that'd be nice too.
And it would make sense for, like, I mean, Streets of Rage 4 has like a bajillion playable characters, and they're adding even more. And there were a lot that were like, I think, I'm trying to remember. I think Streets of Rage 4, you had like kind of the base like party, and then as you played the game, you unlocked like, oh, like, here's the Streets of Rage 1 version of this character,
right? The pixelated stuff.
Streets of Rage 4 is a hell of a video game,
dude. It's so good. But I'm very happy to see Ninja Turtles again. I'm always wondering why we don't see more Turtles games. I know there was that PS3 game a while ago that nobody liked. I didn't play it, but I've heard it's awful.
Was that the Platinum one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that wasn't great.
It's a shame, because Platinum, I mean, I guess Platinum's output is all over the map, but when they're good, they're really good.
I saw Zach, were you at that? I think you might have been with me when there was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Smash Up, the Wii game. God. That was like Smash Brothers ripoff made by Game Arts.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was the thing where I played that at Ubisoft's booth, and the rep who was there just relentlessly kicked the shit out of me in the game.
I remember that.
Like, to the point where he was enjoying it. Yeah, like, and I could just tell, like, he's like, yeah, that's not what you do. And I'm like, what? But, like, can you tell me? He's like, no.
I remember one of the characters was a rabbit.
Yeah.
And I thought, this probably is not for me.
I wanted it to be good.
Yeah, I did too.
It was not.
It was also in the style of the, was it 2007? The 2007 animated movie? Which is not bad. It's fine.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. It just has such a generic look to it.
Yeah. I do. What is it? The 2012 show? That Nickelodeon show is real good.
It's real good. Better than it has any right to be.
Yeah.
I have not watched Rise of the Turtles because it doesn't look as good, but maybe.
Yeah, I've not. Maybe there are more, there's more turtles watching in my future with my child.
There you go.
But that has not happened yet.
Yeah. So there you go. That's Ninja Turtles.
I'll talk about, I guess, the four things that came out today real quick, because I have all four of them now. I have not played all of them. I played the demo for Aerial Knights Never Yield, which is this, like, it's labeled as a free running game. It's basically like a runner game.
Yeah.
Side scrolling, like very Bit Trip runnery, but it's got like such a really cool style to it with a really great soundtrack. I didn't get like that great of a feel for it. Some of the clipping with it, maybe I have some concerns with, but the style is there, and the game's coming out in a month or so, and maybe it's the kind of thing that, like, once I get used to the rhythm of the game, then maybe I'll have less of an issue with that. But it seems really cool. Definitely intrigued in seeing more of that game. Like, that style is off the charts. I'm fascinated by The Longing, which is a game that came out today, in which you play as just like a weird guy that is waiting for
his master.
Your servant waiting for your master, and it's 400 days. However, it seems like there is some kind of mechanic, like it's 400 real-time days. But it seems like there are ways in game to kind of speed that up. But it's, you know, it's mysterious. I think it's already out on PC, which is why some people know that. But the wild thing about this game is that there's just books in here to read. like I believe Moby Dick is just in this game for you to read. And that was actually what put me over the edge in buying it, is that it's the preposterous idea that I don't think I'm going to think that this game is good, but the concept of it is so bonkers. That, like, because it's meant to be like an idle game. It almost seems like it might be deliberately like a parody of Clickers, and that, like, you're doing meaningless tasks because, like, the world is dead, and some of those tasks, like, you can just sit there and read a book.
That's like pretty funny.
I love that idea. I love that meta-ness to it. And it's something that, like, I kind of don't want to read that much more about. I just want to sit down and play it. And kind of see what it's about. Going off of that, a game that I did do that, just sitting down and playing it, not really knowing what it was all about, is Fez, which I think it came out on Xbox 360 like a decade ago.
Yeah, it was a big deal when it launched.
Yeah, it was in like Indie Game the Movie, if people remember that.
Yeah.
Now it's like hilariously outdated. Team Meat's not even together. Edmund McMillan just makes Binding of Isaac.
Yep. Apparently, that's all he does anymore.
And when that documentary came out, that Binding of Isaac was not a thing. Since then, it's taken over the world. But so Fez is a game that I think playing it might be one of my favorite video game playing experiences of all time.
Really?
Because it, like, I don't even want to say too much about it, because it is a game. It has gorgeous voxel graphics and an absolutely slamming disaster piece soundtrack. It's got very good style, But there, at first, it seems like it's kind of like a straightforward platformer, but there's a lot more to it that unlocks as you play. I guess as a little bit of a tease, I legit had a steno pad that I was taking notes to try to figure out the in-game language.
Damn.
Like, it's, oh man. Like, it, and it's a game that I haven't done like a full replay since it came out. I think I got it on PS4, but wound up not really going that deep into a replay.
So you're saying I should buy this game?
Yeah, I do have the idea. Giant Bomb's Jeff Gerstmann tweeted something about how people should like people who have never played Fez before should just start a Discord server and discuss it with each other, but not look about anything about the game outside of the Discord server.
Oh, interesting.
So there's some people on the staff who are interested. Zach, if you want to get on it. It'll be like the Fez prison experiment is, I think, what someone
there you go. I like that. Oh, it's $13.50. I have government money to spend. I can buy this.
But it's like I adore that game. And the last game is one that there is no game Wrong Dimension. That's out now. That's one that I've heard nothing but good things. It was previously a mobile only game. But it's one of those mobile only games. Like it's like, imagine me talking about a game other than Fantasian. it's like that. And we're like, people are like, oh, it's incredible. You should go play it. But apparently There Is No Game is a really good game, and it's out on Switch.
Cool.
Was that all the out now games?
Yeah, those are all four. Well, all three games in a demo.
Okay. I'll real quick talk about Aztec Forgotten Gods, because I am super hyped for this game. It's by Lienzo, who was the company that did Mulaka back in 2018, which I think I was one of the more positive reviews on the internet. But their whole thing is kind of like digging into the mythology of different old cultures. And then presenting that in an interesting new way, which was all like Mulaka was very directly about that. Like it was literally a game about the mythology of this northern Mexican tribe. This looks like it takes that and puts like a cool sci-fi spin on it. It looks like there may be maybe some like Shadow of the Colossus things going on, but more of a platformer. And I'm super interested in it. We haven't seen that much of it, But I feel like I can trust these guys to make the kind of game that I will like. I don't know if everyone will like it, but I'm pretty confident it'll be something that I'm into.
Some of the platforming that they showed reminded me of the PS3 Prince of Persia game, which I really liked.
Yeah, it really does look like an evolution of what they were doing in Mulaka, which had, you know, as you went through the game, you would gain these different abilities that let you transform into different animals and like, you could be like a panther that ran up walls and a bird that could just straight up fly. And so it really looks like they're kind of progressing those sort of platforming ideas in this. Hmm. And I'm really interested to see where they'll take it.
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it does. I love their kind of semi-low poly, I guess,
art style.
I'm not quite sure. Yeah. I will say, I think Mulaka, their previous game, is on sale on the eShop in that indie sale. Okay. I don't know how long that's going.
I think it's until April 25th.
It'll still be going by the time this episode goes up. But yeah, so I think that's like 55% off or something. So if you're curious, I think it's a really cool kind of vaguely Zelda inspired 3D action adventure platformer thingy.
Yeah, it's currently on sale for $9, down from $20.
Yeah, that's a good price for it, I'd say.
It's a very pretty game.
Oh yeah, the Mulaka, that one's definitely like a low poly.
Yeah, yeah.
Art style. and it's, you know, it's not, it definitely comes off as a game made by a small team that's very ambitious in its scope. Sure. So it's got some things now and then. but I thought overall it was super enjoyable.
Huh, cool.
But Zach, you want to talk about the game that is simply referred to as the Where's Waldo game?
yeah, it's because I couldn't remember what it's called. It's called Labyrinth City, and I could not be bothered to look up the name of the developer. Good for me.
I will say that that your description of it as a Where's Waldo game matches exactly with what me and the person I was watching this this Indie World thing with. We, as soon as that came up, we both went like, oh, looks like Where's Waldo?
There you go.
So I'm glad we weren't the only ones.
So, all right, here, let's get some more information about this game. It's made by a company called Darjeeling.
Oh, they probably have good tea.
I mean, you would think. The full name of it appears to be Labyrinth City Pierre the Maze Detective. Okay. So, Pierre the Maze Detective has a new case. Mr. X has stolen the Maze Stone, which has the power to turn the whole of Opera City into a maze. Will you find your way through the mazes and stop Mr. X? Take a trip through a fantastic world of amazing cities, treetop towns, and haunted houses. Trace your way through each maze, spot the clues, and solve the extra mystery challenges along the way. Hours of puzzle fun for all maze detectives.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, this game looks great. Like an actual maze game, but yeah, it looks great. Looks like a Where's Waldo drawing. Yeah. And you're a dude running around the environment trying to find your way through, and it just looks amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
This was so I'll say this, that a lot of times during these indie things, you can get a little burnt out on certain very popular art styles.
Sure.
Like, you know, 8-bit. You'll see a lot of 8 and 16-bit roguelike RPG Metroidvanias.
Like, briefly things. Calling out, I mean, I think the game itself looks good. Skull the Hero Slayer looks really, like, I've heard really good things about that, but because of the way it looked, it took me a while to be like, is that the game that I was thinking of?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like of that similar style, where it's like, it's got like Dark Souls combat, roguelite, and...
It reminded me of Hollow Knight, but just not as pretty.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they did that. Gleamlight was Hollow Knight, but bad.
But I will say that I thought this whole presentation, like pretty much every game that came by, I was like, oh, that looks pretty. Even the ones I wasn't interested in.
Yeah.
I was like, that's pretty.
Like that indie developer Konami's game.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's another one, like Getsu Fumaden, Undying Moon, which is also another, a part of the trend of one. There was one, but not one, but two games from major third-party publishers. Konami,
well,
with Getsu Fumaden, and then Olly Olly World, which is by the Olly Olly developers Roll7, who are wonderful, but they, I believe they are now, like, owned or have some partnership with Private Division, which is owned by Take-Two, which had the hilarious line to me in the press release for the game that we got, where it said, this game will be out during Take-Two's fiscal year 2022, which is exactly what I expect all indie games to highlight.
Just like pick a random company and say it somewhere during their fiscal year.
Yeah.
Skyward Sword will be out sometime in Microsoft's fiscal year 2021.
It is. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, like, I mean, I'll use this time to talk about how Olly Olly World is like exactly what I want out of an Olly Olly sequel.
That looks great.
Yeah,
because I loved the first Olly Olly, and then the second one, it kind of was like, okay, like this is it's better. They've added more to it, but it's kind of the same like trick based premise. It seems like Olly Olly World is basically like the Tony Hawk's Underground of. Or Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4, where they made it open world, where they're changing up enough about it and kind of expanding the scope in a way that makes me really excited about that game, that series again.
Yeah. Point of contention, Tony Hawk 4 was not open world. It still was based around courses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, so was Tony Hawk's Underground.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But it was more like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 through 3 all had the 2-minute timer.
Yeah,
Tony Hawk 4 removed that.
I played Olly Olly on Vita, and it didn't click with me, but this game looks different, but also more fun.
I will also point out that Ollie, I think it's called like Ollie Switch Stance or something, which is a Switch version of 1 and 2. I think I saw it on sale for like $3.
Oh, wow. So I might grab that.
If you want to play Ollie 1 and 2 on Switch, it's extremely cheap.
Huh. There you go.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, I think to your point, John, like every game here like looked good. It looked interesting. Even like, you know, the Annapurna game. Like, it's weird because I when an Annapurna game hits for me, it's like game of the year. It's like I Am Dead, or they put out whatchamacallit, Sinar Wild Hearts. Like those games are magical to me. But like Last Stop and Hindsight both look really cool. I'm not as big in a summit like the. There's a certain style of narrative game that I like, and it's I Am Dead, like, as narrative puzzle games. But like they look cool, and like Annapurna's got a good barometer for quality when they pick out games. Like Road 96 might be a game I want to try. That looks bonkers.
Yeah.
But it looks really cool. It looks really original, and that's what I look for in these indie world presentations. And I'm happy that Nintendo seems to be also wanting that same thing, even if you do run into the game that kind of it's like, oh, it's just another Hollow Knight alike.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of pretty games, Chris Tales, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We did an email interview with a voice actor from that game, Zeno Robinson, who he does the voice of Cyborg on Young Justice.
Oh, really?
And if you look at my interview that I did with him, the last thing is, this isn't a question. I just think it's cool that you're on Young Justice. I love that show.
Just the entire interview is about that.
But it's a funny thing because like that initial pitch was like, he does a voice like My Hero Academia. He's Go in the new Pokemon show. He does some Fire Emblem Hero stuff. And I looked up his voice actor's thing. I'm like, ah, shit, he's Cyborg on Young Justice. This is the best part about him. But he's also a big Geno fan. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, you know, when he comes to Smash, maybe we have a voice actor.
There you go.
But yeah, no, I mean Chris Tales has been on my radar since I think they showed it like maybe was it like the last in person E3 that they showed it off.
It's been a while.
But there's a demo on the eShop that I think is from last summer or something like that, because it was supposed to come out in November and then COVID happened.
Is it not a new demo that's out now? They moved it back up to the top of the eShop demo listings.
Yeah, maybe new. I'll check it out. I think it's the same demo, but maybe it is. Maybe they have updated it. I don't know. Actually,
yeah, I suppose they could have just hatched it.
It's a good demo. Even if it's the one from last summer, it's still good. But that is a game that just looks spellbinding, and it seems like it's going to do potentially cool RPG time travel-y stuff.
Yeah,
cool. Let's see. Oh, so we have to talk about a game that should probably be a good remake, but is being handled forever by somewhat more questionable hands.
Yeah, tell me about this, because I love the game in question.
Yeah, so the House of the Dead remake was a part of this, coming out later in 2021. It's being published by Forever Entertainment, and I think developed by the same company that ported Panzer Dragoon.
Oh, God. And,
okay, so, like, Panzer Dragoon but is playable.
But they fixed that. They fixed
kind
it, right?
Of.
They did a lot of work on it. So here's my view of that situation. I think that the developers behind Panzer Dragoon did fine. I think that the publishers may have put it out before it was done, given
that was a shadow drop.
Yeah, it was. Yes,
and like it was missing the new soundtrack. Like it wasn't like they added a bunch of stuff and fixed things later on. It was like basic features that were advertised for the game weren't there yet. So I think that was a situation where the developer, I don't know if they necessarily did anything wrong.
Okay.
I thought it was a pretty decent, you know, seemingly probably kind of low budget, but decent remaster that was just not quite finished. But if you waited like a month, then now it's great.
Huh. I've thought about getting that before. I think it's also on sale.
Probably. They have confirmed, they confirmed a couple months ago that I think the second one they claim is coming out this year.
Oh, wow.
Which they haven't said, like, they haven't shown or said anything about other than a vague announcement a while ago. But yeah, they said on Twitter that that's this year. So we'll see.
Okay, so the developer might not be bad. It might be a good remake of House of the Dead. We just have to watch
maybe
out for who publishes it.
It just might not be done yet.
What they showed doesn't look that great.
Yeah.
The sound effects kind of look weird. I don't know how you're going to do that without a light gun. Like,
oh yeah. Well,
I mean, House of the Dead
Joy-Cons.
Yeah. That, the House of the Dead, trilogy that was released on Switch, and then also House of the Dead Overkill.
Mm-hmm.
Those are both fine on Wii.
Yeah, with the Wii remote.
Well, yeah.
And a really good pointer.
Yeah,
it's not the same.
Okay.
But
here's my thing. I feel like good developers have struggled with making the pointer work on Switch.
You're right.
Why would I trust either a bad developer or an underfunded one?
But like, I burned down Virtua Cop 2 as a kid on a Dreamcast controller. Like.
We're willing to put up with a lot if the game is good.
Yeah.
Like, you can have these work if
I will. I just want to point out, I believe House of the Dead Overkill was our number one third-party Wii game in a poll that I swear to God I did not rig.
I love that game. I think
it was just I talked a big game about it and got people to support my vote.
It's so the top.
I campaigned. House of the Dead Overkill is a gem.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that should have been on one of my favorite reviews because I did not really expect much of that game and it just blew me away.
Do you remember what it was? What their kill streak was called?
Gorgasm.
Gorgasm.
Yeah, and just the end, like the story of the sound. I still have the soundtrack on an old iPod Nano.
Nice.
That like I because the soundtrack also has like the music that's in the game and then a set of remixes
that
uses voice tracks from the game in and there's even some extra stuff.
Wow,
it's a ride.
And yeah, the final boss is straight out of Dead Alive. It's great.
Yeah,
I like the idea of Neil just having a single iPod in his home.
Specifically that for
people,
that.
When people are like, why do you have that iPod? It's like, oh, that's my House of the Dead iPod. It's exclusively for that.
Well, it was the kind of thing I found that iPod like a year ago. I was like, I wonder what's on this. And like, there's other bands on it, but I'm like, oh, sweet, the House of the Dead soundtrack.
It's like how my PSP is really just my Mega Man powered up machine.
Yeah. Hey, they should remaster Mega Man Legends. Get on it, Forever Entertainment.
They really should. I mean, like, it's a real monkey's paw. Like, okay.
Give it to the Mighty Number 9 guys. They were going to do a sequel.
Yeah.
What happened what happened to Inafune?
He made Recore. And yeah, everyone forgave him.
That was like 6 years ago.
I kind of like Recore.
I did too.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is a pro-Recore podcast. Yes. But, like,
but no, I think he did, like, he won back the favor of the seven people who played Recore.
And he did, he grifted again. Red Ash?
Oh, that's right. Well, that's what the sequel to Mega Man Legends was going to be, right?
Sort of.
Okay.
But Red Ash was like a Kickstarter thing that like I think went like no maybe it failed or something
it went
like,
belly up. I remember it failed.
They got a bunch of money from China and then like that company got bought by Level 5 Concept or whatever.
Oh, I still have my Mighty Number 9 Special Edition with an action figure in the box, and I've yet to play the game.
I bought the Wii U version for $2.
Nice,
and I played it for I think 10 minutes. And I feel like I got my $2 worth.
Not a good video game.
It's immediately bad. It's impressive how immediately bad it is.
Really?
I have heard, I think I've seen some hot takes where people think it's better than Mega Man 11, which honestly...
That's not true.
Maybe it's closer than... I don't think Mega Man 11 is all that good.
So here's the thing, though. Mega
Man
11...
But it's It's Mega Man 11
is the Star Trek Beyond.
Here's my question for Mega Man 11. Does it run?
I believe so, yes.
If it runs at a reasonably consistent frame rate, then it's way better than Mighty No. 9, which just walking forward at the beginning of the game, you can just feel the game going, you want to do what? Oh, no. And like just panicking. Oh, man. It's the moment you touch that controller, it's just like, oh, no.
So in 2017, Inafune's company Comcept was acquired by Level 5.
Okay.
Mighty No. 9 came out in 2016, so did ReCore.
Really?
Since then,
those came out the same year?
Yeah. I think one was like early in the year and the other one was later or something like that. Since then, they had a mobile game called Dragons and Colonies that, according to Wikipedia, it says that it launched in June 2019. It was temporarily taken offline from August to October. Then it was relaunched and then shut down completely in February 2020.
Wow.
Poor Inafune.
The other thing is TBA, Red Ash, where just Kickstarter failed, further funding provided by Fuse Entertainment, release seems uncertain.
Meanwhile, Igarashi successfully remade Castlevania.
I don't love Bloodstained, but like Bloodstained worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like the Switch port was rough.
Unless you played the Switch version.
Well, my thing is, I got the Switch version. I think it was like a buy two, get one free sale. I got a physical copy of it and played it. It came out in June. And I think I played it right around PAX South. So it would have been around January after it came out.
Okay.
Played totally fine on Switch then. Like, definitely, you know, resolution wasn't as good, but it was functional. Like, they did enough to fix it. And it's totally fine. They made a game inspired by Castlevania. I think there's too many fiddly systems to deal with. I kind of just want a straightforward Castlevania game, but you know what kind of does that? The retro Bloodstained games, which are really good.
Really good.
Yeah. Well, it's sad that his best work probably forever now is ReCore.
Is ReCore, yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's just facts.
Yep.
I feel like we should point out, because I've been seeing people dunk on Oxenfree a little bit, or being like, what's the deal with
Oxenfree?
This?
Have they?
At least I've seen some people be like, oh, that wasn't that exciting. And like,
I thought
people
we liked don't realize Oxenfree.
How big of a deal Oxenfree is. Like, the original game has been like optioned for a movie. Like, that's, I mean, granted, A lot of things get optioned for movies, but like it was a huge success when it first came out. It's on Switch, probably on sale. I'm not going to check. You can check for yourself. But Oxenfree 2 got announced coming out later this year. It's by Night School Studios. They also did the game After Party, which is like an adventure game where you're trying to outdrink the devil in hell. But The thing that I've heard about Oxenfree, which it was on like deep discount on Switch a while ago.
It's $10 right now.
On a Reputation alone, I just bought it. I think it was like five or maybe even less than five on Switch at one point, and I bought it. But I picked it up, and what I've heard about that is that it is like kids supernatural, like your teens and there's supernatural things going on.
Yep.
But a lot of it's an adventure game focused on a really unique dialogue system of trying to like marry dialogue closer to the game than like a point and click adventure usually does. And like your choices being more imperative. I have not played it. I've just heard very, very good things, and seeing the sequel and excitement for it kind of come up. Maybe I'll check out the first Oxenfree and get hyped for the second one with everybody else.
Yeah, I might too. I did like a friend of the show, Mike Sklens. He kind of said what I thought too. That was Oxenfree 2 was not Silk Song.
Yeah. No. A lot of people mad about Silk Song, like the one game they know that's an indie game not coming out.
I just want some information about it.
And so it's the thing with that is how Nintendo does these indie worlds, especially like in the past, like maybe early on they kind of, you know, took all comers, But it seems like now, like, they want to have a piece of news attached to each game, mm-hmm. whether it's a release date, major new feature, or the fact that it's coming to Switch. Like, I mean, you can look at something like the Turtles game, and like, they're what, like, okay, it was confirmed for Switch, but like, they kind of said it was coming to consoles and PC before, so like, it's coming to Switch. Like sure. maybe the little bit, but like, Silksong or Sports Story or any of those games are only going to show up at an indie world if they have a release date.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's like Turtles. Like, Turtles had gameplay, which I think was the we got like 2 seconds of gameplay in the trailer, but even that was like that was essentially a gameplay reveal.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think of other things. Like, I think we might have known about some of like Aerial Knights Never Yield was a game that was known, but wasn't known that it was coming to Switch. Also had a release date.
Yeah.
I think some of these things were like, you know, mentioned for other platforms, but we had not seen them for Switch.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, getting whether it's even if it's a release window, like if it's there needs to be a piece of news attached with it. And like Team Cherry with Hollow Knight, like they go to the beat of their own drum. They don't have to do shit.
Yeah.
They have, it's like five people and that game has sold like 45 million copies. They're just sitting in their Scrooge McDuck bank, making Silk Song, taking as long as they want. Like, and Silk Song's going to come up. It's going to be $5. People are going to be real upset about Valiant and video games and how everything else is a ripoff. And meanwhile, Team Cherry's just going to be lighting cigars with $200 bills.
They've printed their own bills for this purpose.
Yeah. And like Sports Story, it's like, I mean, I think they announced later last year that like sometime in 2021, maybe there's news on that soon. I hope there is, because that game does seem like it's closer to being finished.
And COVID probably screwed everything up anyway.
Yeah.
I am bummed that Axiom Verge 2 did not get a date.
Oh, me too.
That is coming out in spring. So I'm just basically like waking up every day being like, maybe today will be the day we'll get a release date. I'm getting more and more excited for that game.
Yeah.
Just because I have the utmost faith in Tom Happ to just make a dope ass Metroidvania.
He's also making that game by himself. Like,
true, right. I know. Isn't like, that insane?
Yeah, like, you take your time, bud.
Yeah.
Like,
it's been man. 6 years. Take another two. It's fine.
Yeah, you're good.
I just love that interview that we had with him where he's like, why would I want other people to make some part of the game? I like making every part of the game.
Yeah.
Like, I hear that, man.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, I think he has, like, a couple, like, sometimes he'll have a few people help out, but primarily it's all him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking through my video game vinyl, and I got Axiom Verge on vinyl, and that is a soundtrack that he made. And it's a really good soundtrack.
Really good.
He carved it into the vinyl himself. He sat with a chisel and just chiseled that thing into vinyl.
Yep.
So I think that's the indie stuff.
Sure.
I do think, unless you guys had any other games you wanted to follow up on.
Not me.
There's like other games that were there that maybe they're cool. I don't know. I need to see more.
Yeah. This was not a full breakdown, merely a list of the games that we personally thought looked interesting.
For more information.
Yes, indeed. But Zach, did I hear you were playing some Pokemon?
Yeah, remember that Pokemon game for Switch that came out like 2 years ago?
Yeah, and you as a topical person are playing it now.
Yeah, just like Control. I've actually had the game for probably 6 months, but I only started playing it because my nephew bought a Switch Lite, or his dad did, bought him a Switch Lite, and he bought Pokemon. So he wants to naturally trade Pokemon with me. So I started it, and I'm already through the sixth gym, I think. I mean, the game is just so easy.
it's very straightforward. So are you doing the thing where you basically just have a core six team and you're just romping through it?
Yep, and I'm having no trouble whatsoever. And I pulled three of my team members from Pokemon Home because I have like 600 Pokemon in Pokemon Home. But I'm using all three of the starters. from this game. I'm using a Skarmory. I don't even remember who the other ones are. I'm just blowing through it. Like, there is no challenge whatsoever, which I kind of like because I'm blowing through it so fast. But on the other hand, I'm like, there's not a lot to this game. And Dynamaxing fucking sucks.
So here's my thing as far as like the challenge level is, I mean, one, first off, Zach, you're playing a kid's game.
I know that, but I mean, do you remember Black and White? Those games were hard.
Yeah. Like I say that kind of facetiously, but yeah. Like, that's what, like, with Pokemon, whenever I'm like, man, why isn't this more complicated? I'm like, oh yeah. But when Sword came out, what I did is I wound up not really having a core sixth team.
Oh, really?
I kind of just had like my like first box in the Pokemon thing because it's so easy. It's so easy to, you know, you can pick up your Pokemon boxes everywhere in this game.
Yeah.
So I would just kind of swap in, and I probably had like a roster of like 10 to 15 that I kind of keep equal. I kept equal leveled as I went through the game.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of a way to like make it harder because I wouldn't like my team wouldn't be as highly leveled.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It did screw me over in the post game because then my team was under leveled. Okay. But then I like did some grinding and stuff. But I will say I might have been squirrely about it when Pokemon Sword and Shield came out and said, why don't you make your own difficulty? But I will say, I wish that the game had some way of like, okay, like, you know what you're doing. We're going to make this a little harder.
Sure.
Like, kind of have that from the outset. Like, okay, here's the base mode. But maybe even have it something where it's like hidden away, nestled somewhere. That like, then like, you know, people like you can like look online and be like, this is really easy. And it's like, oh, if I go to this town and talk to this guy,
yeah,
I can make everybody a little harder.
Or they're like secret gems or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like something like that.
Yeah.
Because I've heard that from a lot of people of like, if you kind of just go where you have a core six team and you're just blowing through it, you're just going to mop the floor with everybody.
Yeah.
And that kind of sucks. I think Pokemon Sword and Shield looks beautiful.
How it looks. It's great.
The wild area runs a little crappy, especially if you're connected online.
Yeah, it does.
But I still really like the concept of it. And I will say, if you do go on to play the DLC, specifically the first one, the Isle of Armor, like it's what I wish the whole game was.
So what is it? Explain what the deal, because I know what these expansions are called. My nephew got them both, but I don't know what they are.
So there's the Isle of Armor and the Crown Tundra. The Isle of Armor, the basics of it is that like there's kind of a quest. Oh God, was it Kubfu? Is that the name
that
of the Pokemon?
Sounds right.
Is there?
It's some sort of pun.
Yeah, there's some kind of like fighting bear Pokemon that like the core of the Isle of Armor is you go there. There's some story beats. You know, get this bear Pokemon, and then you go to the. You can pick one of two towers to go up, and depending to which one you go up. Then the bear Pokemon will evolve into one of two different forms.
Oh.
But what's around there is it's just like it's an island that's all wild area.
That's cool.
Wandering around that and just kind of seeing what new Pokemon are there and going to, like, even if the Dynamax battles suck, sometimes they're fun to do when you, like, want to set up an attack and then go make a sandwich.
And there's apparently a lot of legendaries in there.
Yeah. Well, that's more, I think the Crown Tundra is more with that. I will say the Crown Tundra, I have not touched as much, even if it still like has the same kind of like, oops, all wild area kind of feel.
Yeah.
Because my experiences with the Crown Tundra has been like an hour or two, and like half of that has been Dynamax battles. And I think Dynamax battles are the most boring shit on the planet.
Yeah.
It is like, because
it's just a waste of time.
Because it's this thing where it's just like, look at how cool these graphics look. Especially if you're playing handheld, you're like, the Pokemon Go looks better on my phone, guys. like it's cool, I guess, that like this is just a large turtle, but like, can we maybe speed up these attacks?
Oh yeah, that's because, why I say it's a waste of time.
Yeah, because like you'll go in there and you'll have your Pokemon and. You can play with people online. I'm usually playing with you'll get like three random people to join you.
Yeah.
So you'll queue up your attack and then it goes through every attack of your attack, every attack from the other three people.
Yep.
And then the enemy Pokemon, the Dynamax Pokemon will attack. And if you can Dynamax your Pokemon. So that's going to set off another cutscene of your Pokemon getting real big and making it go slower. Like, I think when it came out, I might have clocked on a timer how long it took it. It was like I would hit attack, and like a minute later, I would pick the controller back up, and yeah, it would be my turn to select my next attack. And it looks cool.
Cooler. It would be cooler if they mega evolved into different forms, but they don't. They just get larger.
There's ones that are like, what was it, Gigamax? I think where there are, or Gigantamax might be the term. Yeah. There's some that kind of change forms, but there's
Pikachu gets fatter.
Yeah, specific ones.
Okay,
and it's like it's only certain Pokemon, and you need to have like the right version of that Pokemon to Gigantamax.
Well, of course,
I think like Snorlax gains like an atmosphere.
Yeah, like, something like that.
Like life starts to form on his
tummy.
Some of
them look really cool.
Oh, that's
cool.
Like that's pretty great.
Yeah.
I do like Pirate Meowth. That's in Shield. Just
I like that too.
Yeah.
The new forms of old Pokemon I generally like.
Yeah. Yeah, and like that's the thing is outside of Dynamax, I kind of like everything else about Pokemon Sword and Shield. There's rough edges, sure, and like yeah, if you play it a normal person way, it's going to be way too easy.
I really like that your rival Hop, he's maybe the worst Pokemon trainer on the planet because he's never even hurt one of my Pokemon.
Yeah,
and yet,
sucks.
After every fight, he's like, I'm doing great.
He's like,
I'm
going to
be the champion.
Yeah, and you're like, nah, brah.
No, that's what I say every time we fight. I'm like, all right, man, get your hopes up here.
I appreciated his endless positivity.
He goes through a little section like between gyms where he's having some doubts about himself. So he gets a new team together. And you wipe the floor with that team, too. He's like, all right, thanks for keeping me on my toes.
Yep.
Listen, he's got a positive self-image. And I'm not going to give him crap for it.
Yeah. My nephew did trade me, like, I have who knows how many Palkia sitting in my box. And he wanted a Palkia, so I gave him one. And he gave me a legendary from this game, which is like a giant skeleton fish monster. And it doesn't look like anything that should be in a Pokemon game. So I kind of like that. But yeah, Pokemon. There you go.
Yeah.
So Heart Gold and Soul Silver are still the best Pokemon games.
I think I'd agree with you. I was.
Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee are the best Pokemon games. Thank you.
I thought about, because I think my kid would really get a kick out of playing Let's Go Pikachu or Eevee. Yeah.
You can play co-op.
Because he can throw the ball, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, when that game came out, he was like, you know, 6 months old. So there's a cute picture that if anybody ever sees me on Gmail, there's a picture of me and him holding the Pokeball together. It's very cute. But yeah, I'm thinking of busting that one out. But I was going to, it was all the chatter after BDSM, whatever, the Shining Pearl Bloated Diamond. I forget what it is. Like,
when's that those game were announced, coming out?
Shit, what is it?
Brilliant?
Yeah, it's Brilliant Diamond. Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl. it's the one where it's like people are breathing it as BDSP, and I'm like, no.
Whoops.
That is too close to pain.
I honestly liked those games on the DS. I'm excited. I'm cautiously optimistic about the remakes. Because those are good games, and the base games are good.
They look like basic-ass remakes, but I will absolutely play them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, my barometer for Pokemon is, like, I just want to, like, feel like a child for, like, 20 to 30 hours, and I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for, like, give me the game of the year. I'm like, no, like, just let me catch some cute little guys and, like, make them fight.
That like, game, that's I got a living Pokedex in that game.
I remember, like, because I think you reviewed Platinum, and I think that was around when I started at the site.
Yep.
But yeah, I think Heart Gold, Soul Silver might be my favorite. I think Sun and Moon are really good. I think Sword and Shield are really good. For me, it's kind of like I like the newness in the more recent games. Some of the quality of life updates.
Yeah.
Work really well.
I like that there are no HMs in this game. I can't tell you how much I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, like they made smart things like that I find hard to go back to. And that's why people are like, why do they need to remake a game from 10 years ago? I'm like, well, one, they remade Fire Red and Leaf Green 8 years after it came out.
Yeah.
And now for Diamond and Pearl, it's been 14.
That's nuts.
So feel old, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, but the ability to run diagonally cannot be overstated.
True.
And that's worth a remake on its own.
Yep. But I think like I'll play Diamond and Pearl. Am I blown away by them? No, but I'm down for playing a Pokemon game.
Yeah.
And Legends looks really neat as well.
Yeah, it does. And like, Snap comes out soon.
Yeah, I'm very excited for Snap. I worked on updating a Know Your Developers feature that I apparently wrote 4 years ago about Pokemon Snap, in which I said at the end, they're never going to make another one. Oops.
Whoop. Do you want me to cut that part out?
I think in the script that I sent out over to you, it's already cut out.
Oh, okay.
But I did, like, the original one is like, we'll probably never see a sequel. I'm like, well, about that, man.
You should write an article like that for Beyond Good and Evil.
Well, but they are making a sequel.
Are they, though? Just, are they really?
Probably not. Michelle Ancel left the company, I think. So.
I know! It's gone. It's not happening.
I'm really excited for Pokemon Snap. After kind of digging back into the research, there's actually, if you get the Ask Iwata book...
Ooh, I started that.
Yeah, it's near the end, but it's when they get to, like, when Shigeru Miyamoto, like, remembers Iwata, he talks about them working on Pokemon Snap and, like, some of the early development and how it came from this Jack and the Beanstalk game that they were making for 64DD.
Really?
And how Iwata was like, we need to make it Pokemon. You need to photograph the Pokemon.
Huh.
You need to photograph the Pokemon.
But yeah, Snap's going to be out real soon, and I would like to take photos of Pokemon. Thank you, please.
Too. All right. I think that'll about do it for this episode of Connectivity. Zach, thank you very much for joining us.
Always happy to oblige.
And Neil, way to fulfill your continual end of the bargain.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get to a point, like when the second kid comes. We might have to figure some things out, because I don't know if I'm going to be able to commit to every Wednesday night.
Bring along the family.
There you go.
I'll be feeding a child on June's connectivities.
All of this will depend on Joel is currently playing Star Fox Zero for an upcoming episode. And maybe he can be my co-host. Depending on how he feels about Star Fox Zero.
I guess teaser for next episode. Sorry, Star Fox Zero Anniversary Spectacular.
Yeah.
The one time I played that game was at PAX with Neil.
Yeah.
And I was so frustrated by it after about 10 minutes. I was like, I cannot do this anymore. What's happening?
Well, it's only like $5 now if you ever wanted to give it a shot again.
Yeah. I've seen it and been very tempted, but then I'd have to get the Wii U out of a box in the closet.
I need to go charge my Wii U gamepad. Cause the Wii U's still hooked up. It's just that the kid plays with the Wii U. So the Wii U gamepad somehow made its way downstairs and has not been plugged in for months.
See if your kid can make it farther than Polygon.
He probably can. So his recent thing has been playing Mario Maker 2. And I've been watching him where initially, like, he would kind of just, like, go. So, like, on, like, that when you boot up Mario Maker 2, it just has that screen. He would just touch Mario on the screen and drag him to the right. Like, that's what he would do. And, like, then it would be, like, he'd get into, like the make a level thing. And he'd just, like, not really drop anything. And then just, like, Mario would fall into a pit. But now, like, I'm looking at him. And that was, like, a couple weeks ago. I'm looking at him now, and he's, like, laying down blocks, running from left to right, jumping on Goombas. There was at one point where I looked at the screen and there was just four giant kitty Bowsers right on the screen. I'm like, what hell are you unleashing?
She's going for the Kaiser levels.
Yeah. And like, there was another time I looked over there. I'm like, that's just three bullet bills. Like, okay, that's filling the screen. I try to dodge that one, Mario.
It's cool that he's, you can watch him progress.
Yeah. Though. Yeah, and it is the kind of thing that, like, I'm hoping he gets to the point where he actually makes a functional level. But he, like, messes around with it, and then they just like seeing the rocket blow it up. So we're probably never going to be able to see his work. He just wants it. It's like his NFT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's still the end of the episode.
Yep.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, Connectivity. ConnectivityNWR is the Twitter handle. You can email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And remember, we're going to be giving away a code of Balan Wonderland.
Oh, Wonderworld. You gave it away. Baron Stain Wonder.
Yeah, Land. Yeah. Baron Stain Bears Land. if you just need to email us, and there needs to be at least five people that email us. I'm not giving away this for totally for free. You need to have a question and just point out what indie world game was your favorite.
All right. Well, yes, once again, thank you for joining us, and we shall see you next week with the only episode that matters, the Star Fox Zero episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
This video was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.